but it was 7 miles to camp and then another like 4 or 5 miles further out from camp. And so, I mean, there was no one back there. And we just had all these elk to ourselves. And we called in, I think the bull I finally killed was number 16 that we had in bow range.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS, this show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. This is episode 111, 111. We are speaking with the guys from Pacific North Wild. It's a group of outdoorsmen from, as you guessed it, the Northwest. They love to hunt deer and elk and bear. We talk about their hunts, lessons learned, what it's like hunting in the Northwest, specifically in Washington some, talk about elk tactics, how they use trail cameras, really cover some great ground here in this episode. The guys are also amazing behind the camera, both as photographers and videographers. They have amazing YouTube videos from their hunts that you guys should definitely check out. So if you're into the Northwest at all, or into elk or trail cameras or filming or photos, like, there's so much to cover in this episode. It's a really fun one. Thanks to the guys for joining us. If you're catching this episode as it's released here in the early part of February 2018, I want to make sure you guys know about two things this coming weekend. We, Exo Mountain Gear, are going to be at the Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City. We'll have some packs. Come say hey, come try on a pack, come check them out. We're also doing a free happy hour Friday evening. That's all the reason to get there. And then also on Saturday and Sunday, Steve will be up at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland. The rest of the time, we will have pro staff there. We don't have a booth, but we will have packs. We'll be taking orders. We will be with our good friends, Born and Raised Outdoors. We'll be in their booth, so be sure and check us out. So again, Portland, Northwest Sportsman Show, Born and Raised Outdoors, and then the Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City. We'll have our own booth in the Elk Addicts Camp area. Going to be a great time. Okay, let's get straight to it. The crew from Pacific North Wild. All right, well, Zach, Jeff, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, besides some technical difficulties, you doing all right, man?
Yeah. I guess I'm not the most computer-savvy guy here at the moment.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us. We'll just blame it on the computer. It's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was been a long time coming. For you guys, Jeff and Zach, we've been wanting to get you guys on the show for sure. So go ahead and just let's start with kind of some context on what you guys do and how that began to come together and what you guys are up to. And then we're going to kind of take a bit of a deep dive into this past season and pull some lessons out of that. But before we get rolling, Jeff, just kind of lead us into Pacific Northwest Wild and what you guys are up to.
Yeah, you can chime in when you want to, Zach. We kind of started off in 2016 season, just a couple guys that were, you know, interested in kind of following the footsteps of what Born and Raised and Hushin are doing. We just fell in love with the brotherhood and camaraderie and kind of enjoy the same type of outlook on hunting and stuff like that. Enjoy it and just want to make it a little bit more than just, you know, a couple weekends a year. And just then we got into the hunting or the filming it, and kind of wanted to pursue that with my limited entry elk hunt last year. So we kind of both dove into that and picked up a couple GoPros and a DSLR and a mic and kind of fell in love with the filming aspect of it. Filmed an elk hunt, filmed a couple other just, you know, backcountry style hunting, and realized it was something we want to take to the next level. So we kind of just branded a a brand, and then kind of came out with some hats and t-shirts just for like merchandise stuff, just to help us out and spread the love of Washington, because it doesn't have any love up here except for what Phelps is doing. And Zach was the first guy that, you know, like really came to mind when I was like, you know what, let's put this thing together. And he was kind of full throttle behind me, so we went with it, and now it's what it is today.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. We just kind of started with, you know, we had never even met before, and we went on a scouting trip together. We just kind of, you know, talking online and through texts and stuff, just kind of figured out that we both kind of were into the same stuff. Said, well, let's give it a go and see what happens. And, you know, we just hit it off right from the bat. Our hunting styles were really similar, and just got super lucky with that. And yeah, then just kind of started doing the filming, and, you know, we'd talk about, you know, plan A and plan B all the way through plan Z. And, you know, 2016 was just so much fun. We were just like, all right, we have to keep doing this and have to keep pushing on it. And so, you know, 2017 came around, and we were hitting it full throttle and trying to get as much content as possible.
Yeah, that's cool. So I don't want to like make this a dating show or dive into all the romantic history, but I think it's interesting to hear the backstory on when you say like you guys met online and, you know, you went on this first hunt and you didn't know each other. That's kind of the story of myself and my elk hunting partner as well. And I think both of our wives were like, you're going into the woods with a strange man and weapons. Like, you sure you're going to come back? How did that happen for you guys? How did you guys get connected?
You want this one?
Yeah, there's a hunting message board here called huntingwashington.com. And I think we kind of messaged back and forth on there a little bit about archery elk hunting. And then we kind of put it together that we were both following each other on Instagram as well. We didn't even know it was the same people. And we kind of started messaging on there and figured out that we were actually applying for the same tag, kind of scouting the same general area for those units. And so after, you know, we kind of sent some Google map images back and forth and kind of figured out kind of a game plan of where we wanted to head into, and we just kind of went for it.
It's interesting that you guys just got started, you know, essentially last season or a little over a year ago, with the filming aspect of it. What was that like for you guys? Because I mean, it's tough to hunt with somebody new. It's tough to archery elk hunt, period. But then to throw filming into all that, I mean, that's a whole lot to bite off at one go.
Yeah, definitely. I was kind of the guy who took the lead on the camera gear and that kind of stuff. So I kind of just got myself into a DSLR, did a little bit of research and what kind of stuff I would like to or would need to get into and produce something halfway decent. So got into a Canon 70D and got a little like Rode video mic, and that was like our baby for the entire season. But like you said, it was super, super difficult to learn on the go like that, and then to capture the film, capture the hunt, put it into story. I'm like, I had to like, you know, download editing software. And I mean, it was everything from scratch. I got the camera of Christmas of 15. So I had like 6 months to get ready, you know, learn it, and then kind of get a hang of the, you know, the software and how everything would work like that. And fortunately enough, one of my buddies that was local here was a little bit more advanced on the video editing, so he actually helped us put together the film finalize it. But yeah, and that was my first time ever, you know, hunting a bull elk before, so that was hard too, to like you said, balance, you know, the photography bit, like side of it, the elk hunting, a new partner. I mean I guess you're gonna go for it, you know, go hard.
yeah and basically Jeff just told me how to turn it on and push record. And that was basically all the basis of my knowledge on DSLR cameras. I had a little GoPro as well that we could just kind of film some vlog style stuff with, or, you know, whatever. But, you know, trying to juggle calling with a new partner, and I had always solo hunted before, so then calling with somebody, and then, you know, he's calling as well and also trying to be the shooter and trying to throw a camera back and forth at each other to try and get this all on film. It was interesting, especially for the first couple days, but we slowly got the hang of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. So neither of you guys had any filming or photography background, really?
None.
No.
Wow. Yeah. Other than playing around with an iPhone.
Yeah. Wow. You guys have made some cool content, man. It's if you guys stick with it, I mean, for what you've done in basically not even a year and a half at this point, that's awesome.
Yeah, for sure, man. And this year, I actually just finished up Zach's 2017 film and entered that into Full Draw Film Tour. So we'll see how that goes. And if that doesn't make it, then hopefully we'll have that pumped out here in, you know, a month or two and have that video on YouTube. And we were kind of chatting over it because we had like a terabyte of footage. So we were kind of thinking of doing maybe, you know, a series of it, kind of like a day by day, like the Born and Raised guys did of just Zach's hunt. And I think that would be pretty cool to, instead of just making it into one film, you know, kind of, you know, show more of the raw stuff. And that's kind of what we would really like to do. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think there's so much opportunity to come up with different forms and formats and lengths of content to show a hunt because, mm-hmm. you know, things like the Full Draw Film Tour are phenomenal. They've done so much to show off some great footage and great hunts, but there's obviously some limitations there in what you can do.
Exactly.
And then don't even, you know, get me started on the TV show format, you know, that whole script. So it's interesting to see, like, with YouTube and with these more different venues to display media that have more freedom to, it's going to be interesting to see how these hunts play out with different formats and how much you can show and how you break it up. And there's a lot to be done there for sure.
The freedom that you get from something like YouTube, where you're just, you get to create the content that you want to put out there for everyone to see, it's liberating. It feels nice to, you know, you don't, like you were kind of getting into the TV side of it, you don't have to stick to a script. You don't have to please anyone but yourself, really. And so that's kind of like, we really enjoy that side of it, is being able to put out content that we as hunters would actually want to watch as well.
So is that the driving goal for you guys, is just to make stuff that you would want to watch? Because I don't think most people realize how much of a pain in the butt it can be to film and all that goes into it. And so I think the guys that stick with it, they have something that's really pushing them and driving them. So what is that for you guys?
Yeah, for me, kind of, it's definitely the drive to just create content, help people out. I mean, I know like maybe the videos don't help people out, but we try our best to show like everything. Like in that first film that we did, the first elk film, I mean, we messed up like every encounter for the first 15, like 10 minutes of that film, you know? So, and then it was really helpful. And to go back to those comments, I just did it, you know, right before we started this podcast, and to see some of the guys say like, wow, man, this was really awesome film. We enjoyed, you know, you showing and being honest and the raw emotion and not trying to hide stuff. And I think that's really what we're after, helping people out, showing people, you know, you can do it with a stranger. You can pick up a camera and just go. You can do it. Maybe we don't recommend just going in with a complete stranger, but
hey, we've all survived it.
Yeah, exactly. It's doable, man. You don't need to be, you know, TV athletes and stuff like that to just go in the woods, grab a tag, grab a camera, and film some stuff. And we're kind of, you know, the perfect case of, you know, like anybody can do it, and people are going to watch your stuff. And it's also an adventure that we all get to relive. And, you know, just, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that added challenge of trying to film is... It keeps it interesting. I mean, every different trip that we go on now, it's like, you know, we look back at the footage that we got, and we're like, oh man, we should have filmed this. We should have filmed that. It keeps that drive going that you can always learn from and do better and stuff like that. And then, I mean, for me too, I like that we're from Washington. We're from a state that's not really talked about other than like Phelps and, you know, Lampers really, for hunting and for putting out good animals or just putting out quality, consistent hunting content. And so if we're able to do that, that's something I'll be really proud of.
Let's talk about Washington a bit. It's a, it's a state that's way out there in terms of accessibility for a lot of guys, for whether that's Eastern guys, Midwest guys that traveled, or even some of the other Western guys. They overlook the opportunity that might be there. And even for the residents, you know, there's, as you mentioned, there's not a ton of content or buzz or hype necessarily about Washington, although I think that's changing a bit. But mm-hmm. give us kind of an overview as residents first of really what Washington has to offer.
I think Washington is greatly underrated in the aspect of the country that it has to offer, the animals that it has to offer, and really the ease of doing so. Like we live in Western Washington and we both work in Western Washington. And like Zach said earlier, you can literally from Western Washington be in, you know, the backcountry at 7,000 feet in 2.5 hours from my house, you know, and you can be way into a wilderness, quote unquote, and have no vehicles, no people, nothing around, but just miles of wilderness. And I think a lot of folks maybe don't realize that, or maybe I don't know what the case is, but some of the hunts that I've gone on this throughout the season, we'll get to a trailhead and there's nobody there, and it's the dead of hunting, you know, rifle season, and then other folks, you know, complain about how many people are out there and stuff. But I think, you know, you sit down on, you know, something like Google Earth or Onyx Maps, and you can really dive into some remote places in Washington, and that's what kind of we're trying to do in what we're doing here in PN Wild, is just really showcasing, you know, Washington State has some beautiful country, and we're kind of proving it.
Yeah, it's pretty true. I mean, Washington, I mean, you can go from all the way, you know, out on the coast, you're in the middle of the freaking rainforest hunting giant coastal rosies and blacktails and giant black bears. And then you can go all the way to the opposite side over on the Idaho border, and you're in rolling wheat country with whitetails all the way up through big, heavy timbered forest in Northeast Washington with big, big Washington whitetails that are timber bucks. And then you got, you know, an emerging elk population up there, really, along with moose and bear and everything else. I mean, we have every type of animal that you'd want to hunt. You might not have the best chance to draw that tag every year, but in Washington, you know, we can hunt deer and elk every year over the counter. We can hunt bear over the counter every year. And the opportunities are out there, especially if you're willing to put in the work, whether that's Google Earth and Onyx Maps scouting or getting out there and just picking a trailhead and hiking. You can definitely get away from people in Washington and get into some gorgeous country and a lot of gorgeous animals.
There was a film that we just actually put out on YouTube, and it was a two-part series of a bear hunt and then a deer hunt. And some of the comments are pretty funny to see. And it's like, wow, that is some gorgeous country. Where is this? And you're like, this is Washington State. You know, it's like, wow, Washington has that kind of country. You know, it's mm-hmm. just, it's super, super pretty in some of the places here in Washington. And I'm glad we're, you know, getting able to show it off.
What is access like? Are you guys hunting a lot of federally controlled public lands? Be in the Pacific Northwest, are there you know, public access on privately held timber cuts? Like, kind of walk us through access and how you know, the land management really works in Washington for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, we stick to national forest land, federally managed stuff. There's a lot of national forest land in Washington, and I think it gets overlooked and underappreciated a lot because maybe the access is difficult, or you know, there's portions of it that aren't going to produce very well, but you got to find those areas that are. And then we have a lot of private timber companies that probably in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years have gone to almost all pay to play. And so that's really dispersed a lot of hunters into public lands now. And so it is getting a little harder to get away from people because they're choosing not to pay to play, or there's a limited amount of permits that these timber companies are selling. And it's kind of weird because, you know, like, I grew up driving all those timber companies with my grandpa when I was like 10 and 11 years old, you know, looking for blacktails and grouse. And all those areas that I grew up hunting, you can't hunt anymore without paying for a permit. But yeah, I mean, and then you get over into the eastern side of the Washington where it's all ranch land and agriculture, and there's a lot of feel free to hunt land. There's a lot of hunt by written permission, and there is some DNR, BLM type parcels over there too. And, you know, you can find all that on Go Hunt or Onyx Maps, and our Fish and Wildlife website has a pretty good mapping tool that you can find a lot of those feel free to hunt private chunks as well. So there is access, but you kind of got to work for it a little bit more than some of the other Western states.
There's tons of, you know, big chunks of wilderness in here in Washington that's, you know, all public land. And then you have the national forest, and there's, it, like he said, the west side is a little more difficult unless you get up towards, you know, with my experience, like the Mount Baker and stuff, and that area is just wide open. And then you get over to the east side, and there's lots of national forests and wilderness areas. And the, a couple of the films that we did were, you know, all national forest, stuff like that. So nothing like paying to play, stuff like that. Just everything was public land that we've done, you know, films on in the past.
So Jeff, that, I mean, you've both mentioned it, the pay to play on those timber lands. How does that work? What kind of costs are involved? Is that for a particular species and season? Is that for a particular calendar year? How does that work? And what is really the cost involved with that?
So there's two major landowners in Washington, one being Weyerhaeuser, and then there's another called Hancock. And each of them, they manage different timber parcels differently. So there's, like a Southwest Washington area, there's a Mount St. Helens area, there's a Snoqualmie area, and they're all managed separately from each other. And so you have to pay separately to, you have to choose which parcel you want access to, basically. And then that payment basically grants you access for a calendar year. I'm not sure when their calendar starts, but you get that access for a year. Some of them offer, you know, you can go up and cut X amount of cords of wood to either take home or sell to make your money back. I mean, that's an option, but, Weyerhaeuser, typically you can hunt deer, elk, bear, and cougar. Whereas Hancock, they hold a special draw for their property for elk. So there's the only way to get put in that hat is to buy their access permit. And that is probably one of the more prized elk permits to have in the state, because they only draw like 6 permits a year.
Oh, so they actually have their own controlled hunt drawing.
Yep, exactly.
Wow, that's crazy. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And, you know, guys buy that, I think it's like a $500 access permit, and they buy it without even planning to hunt it unless they draw that elk tag. So it's really hard to get drawn for it. I think they sell 500 or 600 of those permits each year, and then they draw 6 or 10 people, however many it is. It's not very many, and those are the only people that get to hunt elk on their entire property for the whole season.
Crazy.
That is. So the other permits were, you're legitimately guaranteed access. Is that about that same ballpark range and cost of, say, $500 or so?
Yeah, they kind of range from that $300 to $600 range, depending on which tree farm you're wanting to access.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's good in some sense that at least there is some public opportunity on private lands. Obviously, there's a cost there, but at the same time, it makes you appreciate truly open lands even more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
It's crazy. Like I said, I mean, I grew up on all those, you know, logging roads, and I'm sure Jason Phelps would tell you the same thing. He grew up on a lot of those Weyerhaeuser roads and stuff. And now all that area is pay to play, and, you know, they lock the gates and you can't even walk in. You know, a lot of those, it's to access it by foot, by car, by anything, you have to pay. And so it makes it difficult, and a little frustrating at the same time, but, you know, it is their land, unfortunately. And so they get to make the rules, and it is what it is at this point.
Do you guys have the issues like Oregon where they shut it down for fire season?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That happened.
This season was really bad, too. There was a lot of country shut down in 2017 due to fires.
Yep.
Bummer.
Yeah, it is.
So what's a little bit of information on the actual state managed draw? So I know that you guys have hunted some limited entry hunts last year and this year. Kind of walk us through, at least as residents, the process. Is there a point system, and kind of give us an idea of some of the hunts that you guys have drawn through the lottery?
Jeff, go ahead.
You got two of them this year. You explain it. I know. It's just their point system here is squared in Washington State. It's all squared by your number of entries. So you put in for 2 years, you essentially got 4 points or whatever. So it's I don't know how to explain it. It's a difficult, confusing one, but Zach just had it figured out, I guess.
That was pure luck. But yeah, it's a preference point system. So every year that you apply, and don't get drawn, you accrue another point to go into the hat the following year. And you can buy just like a points option. You don't have, if I know that I'm not going to be able to hunt in September, I can just buy a quality bowl point, and just so that I can keep accruing points for the following year.
Yeah, you don't have to submit it. You can just buy the point and not submit it.
Yeah. So I did that for quite a while when I was younger and didn't have the time to go hunting. So I kind of
smart man.
Yeah. So I was able to accrue a lot of points while I was just hunting over the counter stuff, being kind of a glorified weekend warrior. And then when I knew that I was going to have the time, and when I was getting to the point where I had the amount of points that it should take to draw, hit it hard, and I knew that I was going to be able to have the time when I drew. So
I wasn't aware of the squared system. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty. So once you get up there in that point, high points, it's kind of ridiculous. There's a lot of guys that say you have a better chance, at 5, 6, 7 points rather than sitting at 19, 20 for a lot. Isn't max point in Washington 20, Zach?
I think it's 22 now. They started the point system like 22 or 23 years ago.
Okay.
So are there certain species that are only through draw? Like obviously some species, it's by the area. There's over a counter in some areas, and then by other areas it's draw. But are there certain species that are entirely on draw?
Yeah, your sheep, goat, and moose are entirely draw. And then a branch bull on the east side of the Cascades is all draw system, except for some choice ones up in the northeast corner or something like that that actually holds elk.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and then the sheep, goat, and moose are all once in a lifetime as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and spring bear is strictly draw as well.
Okay, just in the spring.
Yep, fall bear you get 2 tags, and then deer is over the counter here in Washington, and then elk. Like I said, you have to pick a side, so you have to pick a weapon and a side of the mountain range. So you get a west side tag or an east side, and then on the west side you can kill 3-point minimum, and then on the east side it's branch bull and some of the northeast units that's pretty hard, and there's few elk in there. And then in the prime units it's all spike or cow.
Okay. You said you get to pick the side and the weapon?
Yep. In Washington you have to pick a side of the mountain that you would hunt on, and then you have to pick your weapon as well.
Okay.
Only for elk.
Right.
Yeah, only for elk.
But of those 4 opportunities, so there's east, west, and then obviously like archery, rifle, so you got 4 opportunities of those
and
4
muzzle.
And muzzle
and
okay
muzzle loader. Yep.
So of those opportunities you can pick which one specifically you want each year.
Yep
Okay.
Man, and that all has to be done before the special permit application process. Yeah. So like come special application time, you can only apply for archery permits if that's the license that you have.
Right.
Yes. And that's where a lot of guys get confused, because they'd want to, especially for deer, say, like you want to archery hunt, but I would rather put my quality point into for a rifle bucket, but you can't do that. So a lot of guys, are upset, and including me, because I, I'd rather hunt, the early season with a bow sometimes, and that but I wanted to draw a quality tag, I'd rather it be like, with a rifle in November rather than a bow in November,
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it's kind of a downer there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting detail. I mean, as again, in your shoes as a hunter, I would fully agree. That's kind of tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yep. And then with a deer, you just have to pick a weapon. Unless we offer a thing called multi-season here in Washington, and you can hunt with all three weapons, but only still one deer, and it's like a $140 tag if you draw it, but it's like a 90% chance you're going to draw that tag.
Right. Okay.
So if you do have that multi-season deer in your deer tag in your pocket, you can essentially hunt all of September on an archery, the first week of October, I believe, with a muzzleloader, and then immediately after another 11 days with a rifle, and then in November and December you got archery for the west side, and then there's a late archery over this over the counter up in the north country with a bow as well for mule deer and stuff, and then a lot of opportunity for whitetails with a bow in those time of year as well.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of hunting to be done if you get that multi-season deer tag, for sure.
Yeah, and pretty good chances to get it, sounds like.
Yeah, very, very good. I think I've put in for it for the last, you know, 8 years and only not drawn it twice. And then you can buy an over that, or you can buy leftovers August 1st. And so you can just walk into a, you know, a Walmart or Cabela's or whatever and print out a leftover multi-deer tag. Because a lot of guys that, you know, draw it, something comes up, or maybe they draw their special tag they get, or they wanted to leave the state and they don't buy that tag, right? So you get to go in and buy the leftovers, or some guys don't want to spend $140 on it, you know? So you get to go in and buy the leftover, and that's what I've done both the times I didn't draw it. And this year, that was the case for me as well. I didn't draw it this year and walked in on September 1st or August, you know, 31st, whatever, and bought that leftover tag and was hunting archery deer the next day.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Super cool, actually.
So, Zach, you were the man to draw this year. What two hunts did you draw on these limited entry tags?
So I drew a quality bull tag for the east side in the same unit that Jeff drew in 2016. He came in and swiped my tag from me that year. But yeah, I drew that for September, and then I drew a limited entry rifle mule deer hunt in November in that north central Cascade area.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's talk about the elk hunt. So that's I didn't realize that you guys had those back to back. I knew that, Jeff, you had some sort of limited entry tag in 2016. So you guys, you went in there, you had success in 2016, and then now you're coming around on another year later. How did you approach that? Were you going into the same spot, kind of the same area based on that previous year's intel? What was the game plan?
And yeah, we were definitely thinking same exact spot for sure. At the end of the hunt, we kind of had it figured out, actually, you know, holy cow, like we can actually call these animals in, and it actually works like they say it's going to work. And we had a little bit, we had cameras up for, you know, 4 months going into my season. And we actually had this one bull that we were just drooling over all off season. And we're like, you think he's going to be there? You think he's going to be back? And we're both thinking like, yeah, he's definitely going to be back. And he never, in 2017, we never saw him on our cameras, and we were super bummed. But anyways, yeah, we checked out a couple different areas. You know, we had a plan B and C in the back pocket. We knew some fires were ripping through. One of the biggest fires in the state actually went right through that unit that we drew, and then the adjacent unit, and it got pretty shut down in there. And we were kind of worried because we had cameras in there, and one of the times we were checking them, we couldn't actually go check the cameras because the entire road and highway was all blocked off. And so that's when we kind of said, like, yeah, we definitely need, you know, a plan B and C, and maybe an even a D now, you know, because these fires are ripping through and September wasn't cooling down. And you know, my vote was definitely to go back in the same area. And I think Zach was kind of on the fence until those fires came in.
Yeah, pretty much. Cause we had cameras back in the same area that we were in 2016. And then we had cameras up in a new spot, and it was, the cameras were really promising in both areas. I mean, it was super tough. I kept saying like, okay, I'm going to go check these cameras, and you know, all right, whichever one we're having, you know, a ton of cows on, and if we got like a nice couple bulls in there, like that's going to be our opening weekend spot. Well, every freaking time there was, you know, shots of 30 and 40 head of cow and six or seven different nice mature bulls on these cameras. And I'm like, I can't choose which one, you know? And so it was almost a blessing in disguise that these fires came through and kind of almost pushed us back to, you know, where we hunted in 2016. It just kind of reiterated like, okay, maybe it's a sign, we got to take it and roll with it and go back in there. And we did, and we ended up pushing further back from where we hunted in 2016. And I mean, it was just, it was insane. I mean, it was just a freaking rut fest every day. And there was no one back there because it was, what, it was 7 miles to camp and then another like 4 or 5 miles further out from camp. And so, I mean, there was no one back there. And we just had all these elk to ourselves. And we called in, I think the bull I finally killed was number 16 that we had at, wow, in bow range. So,
and it's actually a cool story. You guys, I can't wait for you guys to see this. I can't wait for everybody to see this film that we got in 2017. It was absolutely insane, like he was saying. And it's a cool kind of link here. The bull that Zach ended up killing, like he said, was number 16 to come in to shooting range. We called him in opening morning, 15 minutes into daylight, and Zach didn't get a shot at like 12 yards, like 7 yards.
Yeah. Yeah. Insanely close. And
that's all on film. So we're super excited to see this. Yeah.
Is that the film that might be in Full Draw Film Tour? Or you guys have another plan for that?
Yeah, that's the one that we put in for Full Draw this year.
Yeah. Dang, that's awesome. So you guys said, goodness, you were packed in 7-something miles and then hunting even deeper from there. Was this all packed in on foot? What was access like?
Not 100% of it was on foot. so we had this family friend that drew the tag as well. And with our success from 2016, he kind of...
Yes. So he basically made an offer that if we kind of helped him out on some areas to check out, that he would help pack us in with horses. And so we were like, well, hell yeah. Because we knew he wasn't going to get too far from camp anyways. He's getting up there in age and his knees aren't so good. And so it was like, oh yeah, we'll take him up on the offer and we'll help him out and he'll help us out. And so Jeff, you know, convinces us all that, you know, this guy's going to pack us in on horses. So go ahead and load up super heavy and all this stuff. And then come the day of, dude can't pack us in because his horses are super tired from him packing in. So we had to pack all of our own crap in.
I got my ass chewed by 4 dudes for this.
So, you know, instead of having like a 45 pound pack, we all had like 65 pounds because we were bringing Gatorades and all these luxuries. Because we were like, all we have to do is cross this creek and he's going to meet us at this. It was a road that had washed out. And he's going to meet us up at this road.
Cut that out.
Yeah. No. And so, long story short, he did end up making it up to us and he packed all the meat off the mountain down to the trucks. So
that's certainly helpful. You could always drop the Gatorade if you had to.
Yeah, that was more.
We weren't dropping it. We did have moonshine at camp from the horses, and that was phenomenal. I will shout out to that moonshine.
Yeah. That's funny.
And a little cool side note: these were Mustangs. These were captured government Mustangs with a tattoo and everything, and they proved, you know, that I'm not sure if you guys seen the documentary Unbranded, but it was pretty cool to see these Mustangs do their thing, and Dave's a pretty good horseman and an absolute.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and he took care of those horses and helped us out a ton on that trip.
That's for sure. Awesome.
So, I'm sure we could talk like 2 more hours on just hunting stories, and we didn't even nearly dive into what you guys were up to in 2017 as a whole. But I want to come back to something, both because you mentioned it and because I was on your site and that you guys have a helpful article on it. I want to talk a little bit about trail cameras and how you guys use them.
Okay,
it's not a topic that we've really covered very much on the podcast, so I'm just curious what your guys' experience has been and how you use them. So first of all, when do you guys, like, say for this elk hunt, when do you place them, what type of year, when are you putting them out, when and how often are you checking them leading up to season?
We actually had cameras both years, 2016 and 17, out the first week in June. Mm-hmm. And we ran them all during the whole up into and through the elk season. And we actually, a little cool thing that we did both years was check them Every morning, you know, when we're walking through the meadow or by the, you know, by the wallow or something like that, or when we're hunting, we would still check them and, you know, just to verify that, you know, elk are still moving deer. We haven't pushed them out type of thing. But anyways, back to the initial question. Yeah, we had cameras out the first week in June, and, you know, what we were told, I'm no professional in this category, neither is Zach, but the last couple of years we've had some serious success with them. And I think, oh, we did verify that we had Zach's bull that he shot this year on game camera in the middle of July, just cruising through.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, that was a pretty cool bonus to have. But, yeah, we had game cameras in all sorts of different areas, all types of different game cameras. But the one that we had most success on is just a big meadow. Just back-to-back years, we've had them on the same meadow, and I think that that had the biggest bulls back-to-back years, probably the biggest group of cows, you know, on it. And it, there was no feed, no nothing, just a big meadow. And we actually kind of cornered this meadow off in late of 2017 and kind of put them on different trails to catch, you know, rather than just in the middle of the meadow, we kind of, you know, spread them out and put them on different trails leading into the meadow and leaving the meadow to see, you know, kind of pattern them out and see what they're doing, coming in the evenings or, you know, leaving in the mornings, which way they're going. And we kind of dived more into that in 2017, but 2016, we kind of just threw them up on wallows. We threw them up on just game trails that, you know, we had some activity on and not here. But yeah, we packed in about 100 pounds of salt into some game cameras and let those go. And those are pretty ridiculous. You get lots and lots of elk that don't want to leave for hours on salt. So be aware of that. Have lots of batteries and game and SD cards. If you're using the salt route, make sure you got, you know, a big SD card and a good camera that has a good battery life. But, you know, I think we kind of figured out that, you know, salt's a huge tool, but we had the most success on just this meadow game camera. And I would definitely recommend, you know, setting up several game cameras in your area that you plan on hunting. Look, focus on cows for the archery season. You want to find big groups of cows, and then the bulls will find those cows, you know, eventually. And I think back-to-back years, me and Zach were like, okay, where are these bulls at? You know, not seeing bulls until mid-August, except for that one bull happened to be the one that Zach killed, cruised through in like mid-July, I think. And he just, there was one evening at like, you know, 2 a.m, just cruising right by the camera, and we never saw him again. But I think it's, you know, focus on cows for the archery season, you know, a big solid group of cows and calves, and the bulls will come to you for sure.
That's neat. So how often do you guys get out to check them? Like, say, you know, you're putting them out in June, you're checking them every few weeks or a couple times before season. How's that work?
I think we did every 3 weeks, give or take. So I think we checked them 4 to 5 times between June and August, and we just, you know, change batteries out, put SD cards in, and just kind of let them sit, just get in there quick and quiet, and change the cards, change the batteries, and then get out of there. But we checked them several times. Yeah.
Yeah. This year, I checked. So we had them in 2 different spots, and so Labor Day weekend, I went up and checked both spots for the last time, because our season was going to open the next weekend, and that Labor Day weekend is when Jeff and Jacob and a couple other buddies went up and did their backcountry archery deer and bear hunt. And so while they were off doing that, I was out checking cameras, and it was that last time right before season. And I mean, yeah, I think that was camera check number 4 or 5, you know, for the year. And it was kind of seeing what was on there super recently and kind of what we might expect to see opening weekend.
So, I mean, you've talked about it a bit, but what difference do they make in your hunting strategy, especially as you get closer and closer to opening day?
In the hunting strategy, I don't think it changes a whole lot. It just kind of, I guess, reaffirms that we're concentrating on a good area and an area where we know that there are a healthy group of cows, because those bulls are going to come. I mean, they're going to search for those cows, whether you have the bulls on camera or not. If you have steady groups of cows coming in, stay within, you know, a couple mile radius of those cows, because those bulls are going to either be with them or they're going to be right on the outsides heading towards them. And so it was really more helping us pinpoint kind of, you know, drainages to check, to hit first thing, or, you know, we're going to head up this ridge and bugle off into this drainage and bugle off into that drainage because, you know, we know that this gets way more remote and we think that those cows are coming from that way and or heading back down to bed, you know, because we had the cameras on different access trails as well. And so we kind of had the cows patterned for what they liked to do morning and evening. And then we kind of used that to kind of figure out what we thought these bulls would be doing to track these cows down.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Have you guys, do you take any steps to secure the cameras? Have you had any theft issues, anything like that?
Nope.
No, but I will take this
time. That's another sign you're in a good spot.
Yeah. Exactly. I will take this time to chew someone's ass that had a dirt bike back in the wilderness, which is, you know, kind of outrageous, but what can you do? You know, it's public land. So if you're listening out there, guy, get the hell out of the wilderness with a dirt bike.
It's funny. Yeah. We actually just recorded a show that we talked a whole bunch about off-road vehicle use and when and where and it's appropriate and not what you can do about it. And that's, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. Hopefully the podcast we can
we both just saw that picture and we're checking it. We looked at each other like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Yeah. Luckily, I mean, he looked right at the camera and he didn't take it. So,
oh yeah, to answer your question, we've never secured him or anything like that. And yeah. Never, you know, locked him up or anything. I figured if some guy is back there 9 miles and wants to steal a $100 camera, then if you can find it, whatever, dude. But that's what you want to do. It's on your conscience, not ours.
Yeah. We actually still have two cameras out there right now. We just were too lazy to go get them after packing the bowl out. We're like, screw that. We're not hiking back with the cameras.
Yeah. Yeah, we totally forgot about them. And then we got, oh, man, our cameras. Well, they'll look good in 2018.
Yeah. See how long those batteries last.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's funny. Man, this is time has flown by here. So we didn't get to talk much about the hunts. So give us kind of a roadmap of what you guys will be releasing. I know obviously we don't know what will be in the Fall Draw Film Tour, if anything, but other hunts, where we can follow you, where you guys will be releasing other videos, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I still have some film and work. We have Zach's quality deer hunt that we plan on doing a day by day or at least a 3-part series or something like that with here soon. I have to get to editing on that. And then we have a fall bear, my fall bear film that I still have to put out here soon. And then Zach's elk hunt we're hoping to be on Full Draw Film Tour, but if not, you know, we're gonna release that as well on YouTube, and you can find that just on the PN Wild YouTube page. What else, Zach?
We just put out the Labor Day 2-part video, so that's got a first part is a really nice backcountry Washington bear, and then the following day is when Jeff killed his best deer to date and his first archery deer. And so those two videos are out on our YouTube right now. So those are the latest things that we've put out. Yeah. And then really it's just like, you know, you can check out our links to all the videos that we have out, past videos or whatever is on our YouTube, or go to our website, which is just pnwild.com. Got lots of pictures and some blogs, the trail camera blog that's kind of a little 101 is on there. There's some fitness, like workout kind of blogs on there for guys wanting to get in shape during this off season. And then yeah, you can find us on there, or on, we're super active on Instagram, so you can check us out there. And we're trying to figure out what expos we're going to be at and stuff this year, kind of trying to get out to some of those to mingle and make the rounds. So we'll be out and about, and then it'll be shed season before we know it.
Heck yes.
For sure. So let's wrap up with this, and we'll hit you first, Jeff. What's a lesson or something that you're still focusing on learning and or improving on as a hunter?
Oh man, a lesson that I'm still trying to improve on. I'm sure there's like 6 million. You just put me on the spot, and I just forgot about them all, I guess. Zach, you start off. Maybe I'll have a thought off of your answer.
Oh, mine is patience, big time, because I grew up a Washington whitetail hunter, and so I never did the whole sit in glass for hours on end thing. I kind of say that with such spite.
I have to chime in right here. Yeah, I have to chime in here. So Zach and I, I'm sorry, I have to chime in, but Zach and I are on this late quality hunt here for mule deer here in Washington this year. And it's snowing, it's cold, you know, and we get to this glassing spot that I really want to get the spotter out. Jacob and I get the spotter out and we're sitting down on our packs and I look over and Zach is napping and we've been glassing for, I'm not even joking, maybe 5 minutes. And Zach's already, he's like, let's get moving. I'm like, this is mule deer hunting, bro. We just got to sit tight and glass, man. He's like, okay, I'm so bored.
If I don't see something in an instant, I'm like, let's keep going. Yeah, it's like, let's keep walking. Let's go through this timber and kick something out because that's what I'm used to with whitetails. But yeah, so my big one is I got to be more patient and, you know, have the mental strength to sit there and, you know, hammer through some glass and, you know, kind of take it easy for a little bit and not try and hike as many miles as humanly possible in a day.
That's funny. I can relate. Jeff, do you think of anything?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things that I'm really trying to work on is maybe finding some newer areas, not the old tried and true. You know, I'm really like, if it works, you know, if it works, why try to fix it? I find myself always trying to get back into areas that I've had success in the past before. And I really think it'll help out to learn new areas and to keep growing as a hunter and not just kind of hit the same areas or maybe even the same animals. I mean, Zach's been trying to get me to hunt whitetails and stuff. And I think it'll help out to be a more well-rounded hunter to just kind of go out of your comfort zone and try new things and try new styles. And I applaud Zach for settling down and glassing for mule deer and when he's not excited. Do it. So I think that's a big thing is try to get out of your comfort zone and try new things. And especially if you're having a rough hunt, you know, it's kind of hard to pull out maybe, but maybe pull out and try something different. And, you know, we struggled our ass off for 13 days and maybe we should have tried something different, you know, maybe be less stubborn and maybe pull out and try a different area that you're not, you know, completely used to and comfortable with. Maybe try to just break out of your shell a bit as a hunter and maybe try something you've never done, you know, try something new.
Man, that was a good answer.
That was a good answer.
That was a great tip.
Damn it.
I'd give you a second chance, but yours was entertaining, so let's go with it.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll be the butt of all the jokes, whatever.
Awesome. Well, guys, this was good, and man, I look forward to seeing these hunts unfold on video. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Well, hope you guys enjoyed that one. Be sure to go look up the Pacific North Wild crew on Instagram and YouTube. Check out the stuff. It's always fun seeing the content that they put out. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback for us, shoot us an email, podcast@exomountaingear.com. If you're enjoying the show, we would love to see your review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you might be listening to this. And then don't forget, we have this free training program just for you guys that we co-developed with our friends at Atomic Athlete. Go download this PDF, 4 weeks of training. It's a scalable cycle that you can repeat to prepare yourself for the backcountry. Get it. It's free. Go to exomountaingear.com/train. All right. Let's catch you guys next week.